Coming up on Tech News Today, BlackBerry loses $4 billion, but gains a friend. Winamp may survive the day, and News Corp buys citizen journalism. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, December 20th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT12. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Jason Howell.
Ayaz Akhtar has the day off, but that's not going to stop us from keeping you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world. Put them in some context for you, starting with the top stories. The news view. BlackBerry had mostly horrible news in Q3 2014's earnings report. The company lost $4.4 billion U.S., about four times last quarter's Q3 loss, and recognized revenue on 1.9 billion BlackBerry handsets compared to 3.7 million handsets a year ago. Good news came from growth in the newly formed enterprise services, messaging, and QNX embedded divisions. The devices division will gain a new partner, too. BlackBerry announced that they will partner with Foxconn to create handsets, starting with a 3G BlackBerry 10 handset to launch in March or April 2014, starting in Indonesia.
The European Commission says that the proposals Google has laid out to end its ongoing antitrust case based on claims that it restricts competition on its own services just aren't good enough. Speaking to the Spanish radio station Radio Nacional de España, Competition Commissioner Joaquin Almunia said the latest proposals are not acceptable in the sense that they are not proposals that can eliminate our concerns regarding competition. Meanwhile, Google's also been fined €900,000 for breaking Spanish data protection laws, and the maximum fine allowable and imposed after Google changed its privacy policy and started combining personal info across online services.
Google's latest transparency report of requests for removal of entries from search shows that government takedown requests rose 68% in the first half of 2013 compared to the first half of 2012. Russia and Turkey led the way in increases, though the U.S. still holds the crown for most requests. Google says they removed less than a third of the content requested. Meanwhile, Verizon announced Thursday it will join the transparency bandwagon as much as it's allowed to do and publish the number of law enforcement requests it received in 2013, starting next year.
The new Mac Pro officially went on sale yesterday, December 19th, with a shipping date of December 30th, 2013. However, within mere hours, those ship dates slipped to February. And soon after that, customers started seeing shipping quotes all the way out to March. Apple stores have already been giving Mac Pro quotes and processing orders for business accounts since the start of this week, which is probably contributing to the shortage. And Apple stores seem to be taking orders for personal pickup, but not for walk-in purchases. So I guess what I'm saying is good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that. Daniel Gerken, Adi Shamir, the S in RSA, and Aaron Tromer have demonstrated a successful side channel attack against 4,096-bit RSA by listening to sounds in the 10 to 150 kilohertz range made by a computer as it decrypts data. Their method only works on the new PG1.X implementation of RSA within 4 meters of the target computer. So time to bring some white noise generators with you to the coffee shop, I guess.
Is that what I'm hearing in the background? White noise? Hello, Retro. Spotify has released a Windows-only Winamp look-alike music streaming player called Spotiamp. See what they did there? It requires a Spotify premium subscription to access, but it has some old-school controls, an eject button, for example. You can double-click on a track to play it, click the O button or right-click in the window to bring up a settings menu, paste a link to a Spotify playlist on the main window using Control-V, and so on. Very cute.
Yeah, cute little thing. Hey, News Corp has also acquired the cute little thing called Storyful. Not Storify, Storyful, which describes itself as the world's first social news agency. News Corp paid 18 million euros for Storyful. Storyful will continue as a standalone organization within News Corp and retain its clients like the BBC, New York Times, ABC News. The site collects independent reports and verifies them and has created 750 million views over the last year for its clients who use its videos. That according to the Next Web.
Sources tell All Things D that ARM server chipmaker Calzada has shut down. The company was founded in 2008 and amassed a team of 125 employees, many of whom appear to be losing their jobs. The sources note that companies interested in ARM-based servers, such as Dell and HP, could be sniffing out patent acquisitions from Calzada.
Former Electronic Arts Senior VP David DeMartini will head up Oculus Rift's new game publishing arm, which will try to help developers get additional resources to help them achieve their vision. And Gadget's Ben Gilbert guesses that probably means mostly money. DeMartini helped shepherd third-party developers when at EA as part of the EA Partners program. The Oculus Rift headset is scheduled to launch in 2014.
In news that's going to sound a lot like running in circles, AOL is wrapping up a sale of Winamp and Shoutcast, which would keep both products alive, a source tells TechCrunch, which is also owned by AOL. AOL announced last month that Winamp web services would shut down and the desktop version of the video and music player would no longer be available for download as of today. Then TechCrunch reported that Microsoft was in talks to buy both Winamp and Shoutcast, also owned by AOL. An AOL spokesperson declined to comment.
That's that poor llama. It's not going to get out of its whipping. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace.com, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. I've been using it for its beautiful designs. They've got 20 new ones, but they got tons of great ones in there. All the style options you need to create a unique website for you or your business. It's easy to use. You want to go in and make a post. You want to change some colors. You want to add a user. It's all easy to use. And if you have a question, their support team is there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Inexpensive, starts at just $8 a month, including a free domain name if you sign up for a year. And mobile ready. I've been working on a new site in Squarespace, and it's so great to go to the website on my phone, and it looks like it was built for the phone. It's everything's laid out correctly. It makes sense. Same thing on a tablet, same thing on a desktop, same thing on a laptop. Search engine optimized as well and hosting included. Start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required. Start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT12 to get 10% off and to show your support for Tech News Today. Hey, I want to sincerely thank Squarespace for their ongoing support of Tech News Today. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. All right, joining us today to discuss the stories, have a little bit of a conversation about them. We got a bunch of folks. Darren Kitchen from Hack5.org, because it's a Friday. How's it going, Darren?
It's good to be here, Tom, as always, keeping it liquid.
Also joining us, because he is one of the only reasons I've ever won an award, Tim Stevens, editor-at-large at CNET. How's it going,
You're
Tim?
Welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you.
That's all I can say.
Thank you. And also on our Friday edition, we often get Len Peralta on to illustrate the stories as we go along. And Len's here as well. How's it going, Len?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to say that today's drawings are going to be epic. It's so epic that I started at before the show. That's how exciting this is. So excited to show you guys what it is. So
setting that bar high.
I think I'll live up to
what you got.
I'm excited for it. So
all right, we'll see how it goes. Well, let's get into the stories then, and starting a little bit on a sad note here, but maybe it's a hopeful note. That $4.4 billion gap-adjusted loss for BlackBerry, recognized revenue on 1.9 million BlackBerry handsets, as I said. They have a new organizational structure, and in their earnings release, they said it is meant to drive greater focus on services and software while establishing a more efficient business model for their devices business. So they've seen that growth in enterprise. They've seen growth in messaging, although one wonders if how many of those 40 million users they added to messaging are actually just folks who are like, ooh, BlackBerry Messenger, install, look at that, send one message and done. But they did see some real growth in enterprise services. BlackBerry Enterprise Server 10 rose by 25,000 installs. That's pretty significant. And they've got some deals with QNX Embed. We'll see some stuff at CES from them in the auto area, in the cloud area. Then, of course, there's that Foxconn partnership. So starting in March or April 2014, you'll see the first Foxconn-developed BlackBerry handset come out in Indonesia, followed by six or seven other markets. Referring to that, John Shen said, I'm going to depend on Foxconn for consumer devices. So it seems like BlackBerry is saying, we're going to work on the software. We're going to focus on these other device, you know, enterprise device, QNX Embed. We're going to let Foxconn do the building of the stuff. Chen said he hopes Foxconn will be working on hardware almost exclusively, leaving BlackBerry to concentrate on the software. So, Tim, things suck for BlackBerry right now. Everybody hopes this is going to be the turnaround, and that's going to be always the question every earnings report. What are the good signs? What are the bad signs on balance here?
Yeah, I keep waiting for the bad news to subside, too. And it seems like we still got some more quarters to go. It just keeps getting worse. Handset sales down quite a bit, I think, from 3.6 to 1.9. And they're still predominantly BlackBerry 7 OS devices, yeah. which is not good news. You know, John Chen basically turned around Sybase and pushed them away from database sales into more of a services business. And that's exactly what they're expecting him to do here at BlackBerry. And so far, it seems like he's putting the pieces in place to make that happen. As you mentioned, we're definitely expecting some QNX announcements. I think there's one big QNX announcement that I'm waiting for at CES that I can't talk about yet, but I think it's going to be pretty major when they do make that announcement. I don't know if it's going to be CES or not, but that should be some good news for the company there too. But I'm a little bit concerned and curious about BlackBerry 10 for developing nations. I mean, this is an operating system that they developed for productivity and for multitasking, and that to me just doesn't really seem to equate with a, you know, a lower end phone with a user who's maybe not that familiar with technology yet. I can see Android or iOS being a much better fit for that kind of market. So I'm not sure exactly how well that's going to go for them, but certainly on the services side, I do think they're getting the pieces in place there.
Yeah, and I think you're right about that lower end of the market, very competitive space. You've got Windows down there competing. You've got Android makers down there competing. You've got Firefox OS and Yola and all kinds of other folks scrambling to take that market. You really have to focus there.
And Nokia as well. Nokia, of course, that's their bread and butter and has been for a very long time. And Nokia's got a lot of great products there and more to come there, too. So it's definitely a very, very brutal fighting ground. And I think it's going to be difficult for BlackBerry to really make much ground there, unfortunately.
Titus asks, when is BlackBerry going to do a gaming console? Darren, you ever see that happening?
No, I don't. I mean, when I think BlackBerry, when I think RIM, I don't think gaming console. So I don't see that happening. You know, although I do think that this is at least, you know, a good move for RIM and maybe one that they should have made years ago when they began to see the writing on the wall. Because, I mean, as we know, manufacturing is not cheap. I can't imagine it is in their Waterloo facility in Ontario, Canada either. So, you know, moving to China is probably not a bad move for them considering, well, back in 2009, they even began squeezing their supply chain because, you know, that's expensive. I mean, what was it, a $1.9 billion write-off on handsets not sold? That's nothing to wave a stick at. And so if they can get out of the hardware game and just focus on what they're known for, which is enterprise stuff, which I, again, don't see how that applies to the emerging market. But, you know, there are enterprises in the emerging market, so maybe they can carve something out there. But yeah, this kind of like harkens back to the pre-smartphone era of remember Palm separated to both Palm, the software, and the hardware company? And I think that worked out for them, didn't it? Oh, wait.
Mm. Oh, wait. No, the $1.9 billion was the amount of revenue recognized on the smartphones. They wrote down a significantly larger number on the handsets that they didn't sell. So it's, I think this is probably the beginning of good news for BlackBerry. I've been very wrong about BlackBerry before, though. But this does seem like what they should be doing, focusing on the services, focusing on things like QNX, which is a fantastic operating system. They just haven't made good use of it. They could find some great uses for that. BlackBerry Enterprise Server has continued to be popular and continued to get uptake. Focus on that and figure out how to at least stop the bleeding with the handset devices. That's a good strategy from what I can tell. News Corp acquired Storyful, Sarah Lane. Does this mean they own all the citizen journalism now?
Well, yeah, they're trying to make better use of citizen journalism. Yeah, as you mentioned earlier in the show, Storyful, not to be confused with Storify. They sound a lot alike, but they're different companies. The deal is reported to be about $25 million. Storyful will continue as a standalone company post-acquisition. And it's this is, you know, the Wall Street Journal, which is also a News Corp company, just launched WSJD, which is more of a focus on tech news. They're sort of building that out. Robert Thornson, who's the chief executive at News Corp, says Storyful has become the village square for valuable video, using journalistic sensibility, integrity, and creativity to find, authenticate, and commercialize user-generated content. What's interesting about that is that what Storyful does, what makes it interesting, is that it provides verification that lets a news organization make use of content that's posted on social media sites and kind of gets that whole, is this person verified, out of the way before somebody at a news organization would have to say, well, let's try to figure out if this Twitter account is legit. Is this actually the person that's saying that they are? Now, of course, Twitter has a verification process, which is nobody really knows exactly why some people get verified and others don't. But in general, it's supposed to be, hey, if you know, it's Sarah Lane on Twitter, it really is that person. It's not some sort of an imposter. You get the little check mark. So what's interesting is Malachi Brown, who's the news editor over at Storyful, says, okay, well, here's what we do. Storyful Tech allows us to monitor something like Instagram or other platforms through its API for user-generated content. Our journalists apply editorial insight, so it's a combo of robots and people, to provide hashtags, proper nouns of search terms, geolocation information, monitoring information, and then our technology returns a rich stream of user-generated content. They say they don't have any specific relationship with Instagram, but a company like Instagram doesn't actually have a verification process. So this is sort of a middleman. So you get a bunch of information as a news organization. Maybe somebody posts a video to Instagram and they were the first ones on the scene for a breaking story. And you can sort of figure out, okay, this is actually legitimate news. And now we can run it as a news organization. Seems like a really great tool to have because it requires, I guess, less of that follow-up fact-checking on the News Corp side. Tim, what do you think? I mean, are you familiar with Storyful? Do you think that this is just one company that other news organizations will adopt as a model?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that in theory, at least, this is a potentially very good investment for them because, of course, having social commentary and social perspective is a huge part of any online news right now. But, of course, being the Wall Street Journal, they need to make sure that they've got some sort of verification in place. I think what will make or break this deal is exactly how good that verification is down the road. And, you know, probably have to wait for some big story to break and something bogus to be posted through this for us to find out if indeed it does work. But if it's as effective as they say that it is, then this could certainly give the Wall Street Journal a very powerful, or News Corp in general, I should say, a very powerful means of kind of culling the best from these social services and including some of that commentary and some of, you know, like you mentioned, Instagram videos from the ground and things like that into their stories and having them there very quickly and reliably. So it could be good, but I think that, you know, I still think there's a long way to go before they can really start to reliably include these in their stories.
I think this is a great purchase for an old media company. And I mean, I'm not saying that I wholeheartedly trust in social media for news. However, I will say that as a facility for, say, upstream news gathering, this is kind of great because it's, you know, standardized and such. Like this morning on my way to the office, I noticed this big black plume above the Richmond Chevron facility. And of course, the first thing I think is, oh, my God, there's a fire at the refinery. So what do? I search Twitter. And what did I find? A Instagram photo showing that it was actually just a vehicle fire. So, you know, I calmed down a bit. My biggest concern here, though, is just, you know, what are the mechanisms for the verification process and how easily can it be gamed with, you know, oh, is it something like not Safe Search, but the not AdSense, the search engine thingy from Google, where, you know, you can game the system by figuring out what the algorithm is and how many hackers does it take to
PageRank, I think, right,
Darren? Yeah, PageRank. Yes, thank you. So how many hackers does it take to put together the right geotags for Instagram photos before the snowball effect happens of the retweets and the Me Toos, where even if it is fact-checked, then does it even matter at that point? Because it's like the editor notes or the corrections in the first couple pages of magazines. Who reads those anyway? You know. So, but it's still a good – I think it will have a good impact on News Corp, yeah.
I feel like it's at least a good first, not a first step, because or news organizations are already trying to do this. But instead of saying we're competing with social media and we're losing because social media is always first, it's like, okay, let's figure out how to pull in all of this data from various social media sources and just be faster. So I think in that sense, they're going down the right path.
Yeah, I've always liked Storify's intention to say, let's take the best of citizen journalism, pair it up with some verification and editorial oversight. And I'm glad to see that News Corp plans to let them continue to do that.
Storyful.
Storyful, thank you.
Yep.
I'm glad to see that they're going to keep them doing what they do rather than splitting them up or trying to change it. At least that's what they say. We'll keep an eye on that as well. Keeping an eye on Winamp today. Death Watch, day zero. Will it continue to be downloadable? That's going to be the telling detail of whether AOL's selling it or not. In talks with a potential buyer for not only Winamp, but also Shoutcast. Ingrid London of TechCrunch reported November 21st that Microsoft would possibly be interested in the two products. A TechCrunch source says they are confident a deal can be reached. Now, of course, remember, TechCrunch is owned by AOL. So they're inside the beast here, still trying to get their sources, though. Winamp could live through the day. If it does, if it's still available tomorrow, that means the negotiations are still progressing. And the best guess is Microsoft. Tim, any idea why Microsoft would want Winamp or Shoutcast?
Yeah, I've been pondering this. And the only thing I can think of is that Winamp does have apps on various platforms that Microsoft does not have music apps right now. And if Microsoft wants to expand its Xbox music service, maybe this would give them a bit of a leg up and some development experience on those other platforms and, you know, what it would take to bring that service to these other platforms. That's really the only thing that I can think of other than, you know, maybe goodwill and trying to keep a kind of a venerable brand around. But it's definitely, you know, it was a sad day for me when they announced that it was going to be shut down. And I was surprised. I went to winamp.com today and there's nothing on there that gives you any indication that it isn't business as usual. There's no sort of notice on here about downloading now because the end is nigh or anything like that. It just looks like a normal website.
They're not
still
holding a picket sign.
You know. Nope. Yeah. No counter going down or anything like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to play the tech fanboy hacker card here and say, Microsoft? Right. Really? They're just going to Skype it, you know? I mean, maybe it's just like the 90s kid in me, but it's like Winamp belongs in the public domain. I mean, sure, Shoutcast is proprietary, but it's still really cool, and I'd much rather see a Kickstarter to make it, you know, to acquire it and open source it. This is the beginnings of an Adam Sandler movie. We need to save the community center. Where's our bake sale?
You see everything as an Adam Sandler movie, Darren.
Okay, that's true. But, you know, I will say, though, it will always be available for download. The best version will be available for download. Oldversion.com even has 2.95 at over 500,000 downloads. The best version before the code change.
For the dark times.
Yes.
Totally could see why Microsoft would want Shoutcast. That fits right in with their Xbox Music strategy. Remember, Xbox Music is going to be on Windows 8.1. It is appearing on Windows 8.1 on Windows Phone. It's their new Zune. It's the future for Microsoft providing you music. And Shoutcast would fit right into that very nicely, especially with their radio station deals. Winamp, maybe just as a PR move, like, hey, we're not the Microsoft of the 90s anymore, Darren Kitchen. We saved Winamp. You can still whip that llama all day long. Thanks to Steve Ballmer and Microsoft. Wait, not Steve Ballmer anymore. Thanks to whoever takes over in Microsoft. We'll see what. Yeah, I think this is going to happen. I think that it is a sentimental play for Winamp, but I think Shoutcast is the valuable piece. That's the TLDR version. Why is Jack Dorsey returning shares that he owns in his own company, Sarah?
Well, good question, because it's not unheard of, but it's pretty unusual. Jack Dorsey, of course, is the founder and CEO of Square. He's voluntarily given 10% of his shares in the company back to Square. What that will do is it will increase the pool of shares that are available for employees and acquisitions, and it also minimizes dilution for shareholders. So it's like, wow, what a goodwill little measure there. So Dorsey owns about 30% of Square. He's giving back about 3% of the company's total equity. Those shares that he's returning are worth between $97.5 million and $150 million based on estimates of the company's valuation. It's a lot of money. He says, well, in general, it'll benefit people that are being hired now, even though Square's been around for a while. They have 700 employees now. They've grown quite a bit in the last year. They'll be able to receive larger stock grants because there's more available. Existing employees will also benefit because they might be eligible for additional equity grants, and the shares that they already own will be worth more over time because they'll face less dilution. And Dorsey tells Fortune magazine he wants to be able to continue to reward success, broadly and not and to encourage employees to take risks. He says, quote, I hope we're building an organization that is not dependent on one person or a group of people who were here in the early days, which is interesting because I look at Twitter, you know, Twitter IPOs, and a lot of people who were there at the beginning end up having a huge, huge portion of the shares and end up it ends up being very disproportional for people who might be doing very good work but haven't been in the company that long. So after the transaction, he'll retain ownership of about 27% of Square, still quite a bit, which is valued at $3.25 billion back in 2012. Dorsey's stake would still be at about $877 million. So he's not, like, giving his money away. He's still very, very rich. He also has a ton of Twitter stock. It's in the billions, the valuation. So, I mean, is this kind of like, hey, this is about the company that needs to grow down the road, and I want to make sure that everybody knows that I'm committed, and I want to have good talent coming in, even at a later stage in the game? Tim, what do you think?
Yeah, I would definitely say that they, I don't want to say they're struggling, but they probably need a bit more incentive to lure talent into the company. I mean, it's a very, very challenging market right there when it comes to hiring talented folks. And, you know, if you're running out of stock and if you're having a hard time incentivizing people to come on board your company, especially without kind of demotivating the people who are already there, this could be definitely something that could help them in that regard. And I, you know, I don't want to sound too cynical here, but in the long run, it will help him because if they can bring better talent into the company, then ultimately the value of the company will go up, and he should more than make up the difference. But ultimately, I mean, I think it's a great move. It's a very nice move, and it shows that he's got a lot of commitment and a lot of faith to the company.
Yeah, it doesn't sound completely selfless, but it does sound like good old-fashioned invisible hand capitalism, you know? I mean, after $877 million, what more is there to do? I mean, don't get me wrong. Maybe he can't cure malaria, but you can at least take care of you and your own and grow your company at the same time. So I applaud this.
And don't forget that Square is essentially and most probably pre-IPO right now. So this move has to be as a result of those early calculations as well, whether it's regarding the stock price, the average stock price, the number of shares they want to issue, or whether it just has to do with what Tim said, attracting that talent and saying, hey, you guys, we're not saying anything, but you see all the rumors about pre-IPO. You want some stock? They want to be able to have enough stock to give people without diluting it for their investors who also want to have all of that IPO return as well. So I think that's probably one of the fundamental motivations behind this. Shall we talk about Mercedes-Benz then?
Yay!
Yeah.
Tim Stevens, you got to look inside the Mercedes-Benz Sunnyvale, California R&D facility. That was an interesting article. There's some interesting stuff going on. What can you tell us about it?
Thanks. Yeah, they've actually been in the Valley since I think the mid-90s. I was actually surprised at how long they've been there, but they've been doing a lot of interesting work there. They just opened up this amazing new facility there. They've got 300 employees, and they're looking to bring on quite a few more. But it's where a lot of the prototyping and the ideation comes from for a lot of their apps and a lot of their in-car infotainment systems and a lot of their smart driving systems as well. So, for example, I saw a Pebble app, so running on the smartwatch, that you can basically see where your car is parked. So if you walk away from your car, it'll tell you how to get back to your car, more or less. While you're in the car, if there's a notification that there's an accident ahead of you, it'll vibrate the watch to get your attention. And they even showed a version that you could unlock your car from your watch. They said that's probably not going to be coming anytime soon, but it sounded like the other Pebble apps should be available in the not-too-distant future, which is cool. They're also keenly aware of the legislation issues surrounding Google Glass and using that while driving. So they showed a prototype app where if you were using Glass for navigation, as soon as you sat down in the car, it would disable Glass and the in-car navigation system would take over for Glass and give you directions to where you were going. And then as soon as you parked and got out of the car again, it would basically hand things back over to Glass again and let you pick up where you left off. So pretty cool stuff. And then the big thing they were very proud of was their partnership with Nest. Basically, what they want the car to be able to do is to call ahead to wherever you're going and make sure that the thermostat is set. So they gave the example of, let's say you've got your ski cabin up in the top of the mountain somewhere. It's a couple hours away. You plug the address of your ski cabin into your navigation system. The car dials ahead to your Nest thermostat and makes sure that the cabin is all nice and cozy for you when you get there, which is not a problem that I deal with too often, but it's kind of a nice idea. The basic concept is they're trying to make the car smarter about what you're trying to do, so you have to spend less time entering in addresses and telling the car what to do. They want the car to be able to figure out what you're trying to do. So it's kind of the same thing that Google's doing with predictive search and Google Now. They're just trying to bring that to your car. So a lot of cool stuff going on, and a lot of that stuff gets right into the production Mercedes-Benzes that are all, you know, produced in Germany, some of which are now produced in the U.S. as well. So it's cool to see that technology coming here from Silicon Valley.
Are they doing any talk with Mercedes about self-driving cars, or is that just at a different research and development center?
That stuff would definitely be coming primarily from Germany. They are definitely doing a lot of research and investigations there, but it seems like they're basically going to be taking small steps along the driver assistance route and then ultimately getting us to the point where the cars can drive themselves. So rather than, you know, next year you'll go out and buy a Mercedes that drives itself, you know, there'll be a Mercedes that can drive itself in thick traffic, and there'll be a Mercedes that can, you know, drive itself at certain speeds on the highway. And you know, you'll just kind of gradually get to the point where you didn't even realize there was a car that, you know, had this magical step of it can drive itself. It'll just be kind of a slow progression. But they're definitely looking into a lot of stuff. And they are doing some research here in the U.S. because we have some interesting problems. For example, there are almost no four-way stops in Europe, but they're, of course, very common here in the U.S. So things like that have to be developed and tested here.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that as being a challenge for a European company. I guess that the challenge would work in reverse, right? We don't have a whole lot of roundabouts to go test on.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, the signs are very different in Europe, and there are some other driving laws and, you know, stopping crosswalks for people and that kind of thing, which are a bit different in Europe than they are here. So there's a lot of, you know, a lot of partnerships with the European development teams. But when it comes to driving aids, it seems like the majority of that happens in Europe. When it comes to software and infotainment and apps, most of that's happening here.
I like the trend that it's a little bit more of a let's predict what kind of habits you already have and to be able to push some of that information to you. I have a Mercedes. It's nothing fancy, but you know, but the onboard system, there's a lot in there. You could do just about anything, but it does require a lot of you're moving around in the controls and you're in all these different areas, and it's not something that you want to do while driving most of the time. And so, you know, in a sense, I'm like, I've got this really, it's a powerful little system here, but it can be kind of dangerous as well. So I really think, just from a safety consideration, that some of these changes seem kind of small, but they just help you not have to do as much while you're driving. And for me, it's not so much self-driving cars seem like still a really long ways away from anything that I'm going to have, but my next car might just be a little bit smarter.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think this is good for Mercedes, because once you get past the whole notion that most of these are just, you know, engines and transmissions bolted onto frames with wheels and seats, what more is there? And, you know, you have to tech it out, because what else is going to make you decide between the Mercedes and the BMW or the Audi? So yes, more car tech, very cool. Just kind of wish it was more upgradable and modular, but there's of course no money in that. But still cool tech.
Yeah, and that's a big challenge for them, of course, because it takes 4 and 5 years to develop a new car. But of course, we buy a new smartphone every 6 months or something like that at this point. So for them to be able to target the latest and greatest is a very, very big challenge for them. So they are working on more modular systems, but ultimately it's pretty difficult to design a car interior around an interface that you're going to pop out and plug a new one in after a year. So they are trying to get there, but ultimately, yeah, like you said, there's not a lot of money to be made there. They want you to go and buy a new car, and any incentive they can do to make you do that for them is good.
Yeah. Mercedes now with support for the Microsoft Zune.
It is the new space, right? It is the great frontier for the Internet of Things. It's your home and your car. It's kind of the two areas that you always hear people talk about when they talk about examples for this thing. So I think Mercedes is certainly not alone in wanting to show themselves being on the forefront of this stuff. Before we move off this story, though, Tim, how close are most of these things? They're years away, most of the stuff they're showing off, right?
It sounded like the Pebble app is actually not far away at all. They said okay. Soon. So I kind of got the feeling that we might see that sometime in 2014. The Glass app was very much a conceptual thing. It looked like it'd be pretty easy to do, but I think that there's really not that much incentive for them to do that because there are so few Glass headsets out there. But some of the other more advanced stuff, they had like an interior that you could point at a restaurant and it would show you reviews of that restaurant. I mean, that's probably 5 years away. And then the self-driving cars, they were probably 5 to 10 years away from a full-on self-driving car.
All right. Last story to talk about here involves guns. So, of course, we turn it over to Sarah Lane.
Solid Concepts is a company that showed off the first fully functional metal 3D gun last month. They had a video. I think it's been seen on YouTube like 4 million times of that gun being fired to sort of show, this is a legitimate thing. The company has announced today that they're putting 100 limited edition models of the 1911 45 caliber pistol on sale for a low price of $11,900 each. So, yeah. Solid Concept showed how the gun worked. They fired 50 rounds through it. The company says It's now fired nearly 2,000 rounds through the pistol without a single malfunction. Wow. And, yeah, that's different than the very first 3D-printed gun because it was a single-shot plastic Liberator. Solid Concept says, we're not trying to promote the right to bear arms. This is not a Second Amendment thing. The purpose is we want to be able to print a firearm to demonstrate the ability to turn out precision, durable parts. They can withstand massive pressure, obviously created by firing a bullet. And if you purchase one of the limited edition guns, you'll also have a chance to tour Solid Concepts Texas facility. You can see how the guns are printed. You can join their lead additive manufacturing engineers. Get, you know, you're basically getting a tour. You're looking on the range for the first test firing of this limited gun. Okay. Well, you know, there's a little bit of a, hey, you know, limited quantity. It's very expensive. It's probably very small amount of people who can't afford and want these. But I don't know, Tim. I mean, it sounds like the company says we're trying not to get, you know, political about all of this, but here's what we can do. This is pretty cool. Are you do you have $12,000 on hand?
It is pretty cool, but that is an awful lot of money. If you're looking for a 1911 like a Colt or a Kimber, you're looking between like $1,000 and $2,000 for a brand new one, which will probably shoot better than this guy. And I actually was doing a little research, and I found a World War One Army issue 1911 Colt for $2,000. So if you want, you know, one of these guns with proper history, you can get it for a lot less money. But there are a lot of handgun collectors who spend a lot of money on these special edition weapons, and this is certainly a very special edition weapon. This is probably the first 3D gun that you can actually go out and buy. Of course, the idea is that these will be obsolete because you'll be able to print your own in the not-too-distant future. But it is an interesting concept, and it is a great talking point. If you need something for your collection, you got the money to spend, sure, why not?
How many of these are you going to pick up, Darren?
I'm not going to get any of the guns, but I do love the technology behind it. And I'm not dismissing the 1911. Fantastic piece of hardware there. And so is the printer that made it. I think that this is a huge boon for consumers and also sustainability, because if you change the word gun with, say, can or airplane or whatever have you, I mean, think, Sarah, you could can your own vegetables, right? I mean, that's allowing us to actually take care of ourselves. And I think that's awesome stuff, because inherently all of this technology is neutral. I mean, of course, it, like BitTorrent, you know, with guns and stuff, it's going to get a bad rap in that sense. But I feel like it's, you know, 3D printing is changing the relationship that consumers have with, well, what they consume, what they can make. And I think this is huge, and I just hope that legislation doesn't prevent innovation in this space.
Don't need a 3D printer to can your own vegetables.
Yeah, I was sort of trying to work through that in my head as well. I wasn't sure.
I guess you could make a shovel, and you could use the shovel to work in your garden.
A tough shovel. Yeah.
You needed a shovel.
Really strong.
You printed one out of metal.
Yeah.
Point,
exactly.
Point definitely taken.
That's safe. It's not going to hurt. I can't hurt anybody with a shovel.
3D printed hose.
I am like to 3D printers what Sarah Lane is to Bitcoin. I'm the first person to be a fan of a story about 3D printing. However, I'm not saying I don't like what Solid Concepts is doing. It's a proof of concept. It's cool technology. I totally agree with you on that, Darren. This is a great printer and a great use of it. This really is a marketing ploy. I mean, at $11,900 each, they're saying like, hey, own a piece of history. And yes, if you want to be smart about your purchasing, go buy the same gun somewhere else. This is just you buying the concept of, hey, this was one of the early 3D printed guns because it happens to be the early 3D printed gun. I don't know if this is the future of gun manufacturing or not, but I do like the fact that they're able to make this thing. It certainly isn't practical at this point.
Yeah, use the 11 grand as a down payment on the printer that can make these and then make your life better with it.
Teach a man to print and he'll print a 3D gun, as they say. Let's fire up the randomizer. Woo, it's a tight one by one vote right now. Oh, it's a tie. What do we do now? It's a tie right now.
We talk about both of them.
Between a tiny speaker printed on a single sheet of paper and solar cells could help Windows generate power. Not Windows, the operating system, but actual glass window. Ah, tiny speaker just pulled ahead by three votes now. That one was the only one not from the subreddit. Captain Kippers got, you know, he's the king of the randomizer. He was number two. We can talk a little about both of them. The solar cells were developed by the Oxford team led by physicist Henry J. Smith. Semi-transparent solar cells using I don't know how to pronounce this correctly, but I think it's perovskites, a class of mineral-like crystalline materials that have been pretty popular among photovoltaic researchers. So the idea is you can still look through the window, but it can still be a photovoltaic material that generates electricity. But the tiny paper speaker kind of brings us back to 3D printing a little bit. This is one sheet. It's got the circuits printed on it, and then you fold up the speaker cone out of the paper, and you've got yourself a working speaker.
Tom, I think I've figured it out here. Last week we were talking about the first 3D printed, or not the first, yeah, was it the first 3D printed speaker as well? So now we have a paper printed speaker. I feel like speakers are the new hello world of 3D.
Yeah, and as a few people in the chat room are pointing out, you know, you've been able to make one sheet paper speakers for a long time. That part isn't what's new. What's new here is combining the 3D printing aspect of it to make this happen. It's kind of cool. People in the chat seem to like it too.
It's super cool.
As a big solar fan, I mean, my van is completely off the grid with the solar. I'm a huge fan of the window stuff, and I just wish it was blanketed on everything. So,
the project is called Gorgishong, by the way. It's from a French-based product designer. If you want to find out more about it, check out wired.com. Let's see if anything's on the calendar, Sarah.
There is something on the calendar. The CyanogenMod Oppo N1 smartphone has gotten Google's approval. It had to go through a compatibility test and will ship on December 24th. Merry Christmas to those who celebrate.
Just in time. And we'll see what's incoming. I bet it's an email.
Incoming message.
Gosh, you're like a... You have ESPN or something.
A whole week ago, says
Troy, who wrote in, Tom said, asked if we could trust Swiss data protection laws since Swiss bankers are now cooperating with the U.S. I wonder if he knows what it took to get that cooperation. The U.S. filed criminal charges against the head of major Swiss banks for helping U.S. citizens evade taxes. These bankers didn't appear, argued that this was an overreach since the charged bankers were not Americans. The alleged activity occurred outside the nation. That was outside the court's jurisdiction. Court didn't care, called them fugitives from justice for not appearing, meaning if they ever left Switzerland, they might be arrested, extradited to the U.S. Shortly after that, they struck a deal to give up Americans' data and nobody else's. Troy says this action is a major problem in world eyes as we enforced our laws on foreign nationals for actions performed outside our borders.
Yeah, well, that's why I asked the question. Is the data protection of Switzerland suffering because of this? Troy's opinion, I think, based on the tone of his email, is no. This was a unique exception with the banks, and it's limited to terrorists. In his TLDR version that he provided, he said, I trust their data protection so long as I am not actually an international terrorist. But the question then becomes, are you sure that you won't be seen as an international terrorist at some point, right? Of course you're not going to be one. But you're trusting that the definition of that is going to stay outside of the things that you do. Little tinfoil hat there, of course, but that is the problem. And the Swiss banks were thought to be impenetrable no matter who you are or what you were or what you were perceived to be, and they weren't. So down the road, maybe that data protection becomes a problem in the future. But I think Troy makes a reasonable argument that it's not something you would have to worry about right away, necessarily. So thanks for the email, Troy. Appreciate that. And thank you all for watching. Thank you, Darren Kitchen, for being on the show. Hack5.org, HAK5.org. What do you guys got going on these days?
We have a fantastic episode. It's friendly for everyone. Go over and check it out just to see a drone hacking another drone. That's right. We've got a Wi-Fi Pineapple equipped drone.
Drone on drone hacking. Wow.
Yeah, it's actually a denial of drone attack that we've developed here that will make your Parrot AR drone wielding friends very sad, very, very sad and fun. It's fun. It's just fun to see drones fall out of the sky after you've hacked them.
As long as they don't fall on you, I guess that's true.
Yeah. HAK5.org.
HAK5.org, exactly. Tim Stevens, CNET.com, editor at large. You're having some good times over there. I've seen great stuff coming out of you. What are you doing next?
Well, next I'm doing a deep dive into something new, which is a vacation for me. I haven't had a vacation in a long time, so I'm going to be taking a week off. And then, of course, after that, we've got CES coming up, and I've got two killer features already primed for CES week, and nice. A lot more to come out there.
Excellent. Well, tell Lindsay Turrentine I say hello.
I certainly will.
All right. Thank you, man. And finally, it's supposed to be an epic day for illustrations, Len.
I'd say it is.
It's time for you to reveal. What are you talking about? What's been going on? I haven't seen anything.
Yes. Well, I have to say, for a gentleman by the name of Chris Copping, who is a fan of the show, whose birthday it is today, actually, for his happy birthday, Chris, for his birthday, commissioned me to do something nice for Tech News Today. And so I decided to do a holiday card featuring the hosts of Tech News Today, Tom, Ayaz, Sarah, and Jason.
Aww. I love it. That's
very nice.
What you'll like to know is that Chris, he commissioned me for this, and this will be available for sale after in the online store, a little bit of TNT for the holiday season. So
I'm getting
first of all, I would never strangle Ayaz on Christmas.
It must have been something he said off camera. Who knows?
It's the Christmas strangle the other person over a Christmas tree tradition. Kind of like kissing under the mistletoe. It's a tradition.
It comes from Boston.
You guys are all so upset, and I'm just like, look at me. I got a great figure.
Right? Jason's running to save Ayaz. Ayaz and I are in battle, and Sarah's like, it's all good.
Len, I really appreciate the dark under my eyes to signify how tired I've been lately. Thank you for that.
No problem. No problem.
I love this. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you to Chris for allowing me to do this. This was a lot of fun, and it was great to be able to do this for you guys today in anticipation for the holiday. So,
yeah. LenPeraltaStore.com if you'd like to have a copy of that. And thank you, Chris, for the suggestion. That was a great idea. I really appreciate that. So check it out, LenPeraltaStore.com. Well, don't forget, we're off for the holidays, but we have a ton of great specials planned for you. We got our predictions episode, our predictions results episode, our open mic episode, of course, our best of episode. And then I'll be back for one last show on December 30th with Darren Kitchen back again and Dr. Kiki as my guests. We'll see you then.
Cool.